Hello and welcome to Azo Nano News for the week commencing the 23rd of June 2008, brought to you by azonano.com. My name is Stuart Cameron. In this edition of Azo Nano News, as well as bringing you the latest news from the international nanotechnology industry, we'll hear how nanotech fibers are helping to keep people warm and cool, how MRI images may soon be in color instead of black and white thanks to nanotechnology, and how engineers are developing fridges that are so small they can fit inside your laptop. In this week's Azo Nano interview, Cameron Chai speaks to Jason Harheim, manager of DPM applications at Nano Inc. These stories and more in this edition of Azo Nano News. No matter how hot or humid it might get during the summer, or wet and cold during the autumn and winter, workers are less prone to feel the weather's effects thanks to nanotechnology-treated fibres that effectively regulate body temperatures. Nanotechnology treatments are applied at microscopic levels to prevent clogging of individual fibres and allow fabrics to retain their comfort, protective and draping characteristics. Major uniform suppliers and manufacturers have countless options when choosing fabrics to meet the garment needs of today's workforce, but it's specially treated polyesters used in combination with cotton that have now become the preferred choice for tens of millions of uniform wearers because of the overall comfort features and the on-the-job durability they provide. Researchers at Purdue University are developing a miniature refrigeration system small enough to fit inside laptops and personal computers, a cooling technology that would boost performance while shrinking the size of computers. Unlike conventional cooling systems, which use a fan to circulate air through a thin device called a heatsink attached to computer chips, miniature refrigeration would dramatically increase how much heat could be removed. The Purdue research focuses on learning how to design miniature components called compressors and evaporators, which are critical for refrigeration systems. The researchers developed an analytical model for designing tiny compressors that pump refrigerants using penny-sized diaphragms and validated the model with experimental data. The elastic membranes are made of ultra-thin sheets of a plastic called polyimide and coated with an electrically conductive metallic layer. The metal layer allows the diaphragm to be moved backwards and forwards to produce a pumping action using electrical charges or electrostatic diaphragm compression. Malaria and dengue fever will be the early targets of new trans-Pacific research using minuscule barcodes to detect diseases. The University of Queensland and the University of Washington are poised to launch the research after Queensland Premier Anna Bligh announced $650,000 from the National and International Research Alliances Program on June 18. Detection of the pathogens of two debilitating mosquito-borne diseases, malaria and dengue fever, are just the first targets of this research. Down the track, the results are likely to have widespread applications in medicine, biosecurity, pharmaceuticals, and agriculture. The researchers are pioneers of nanobarcodes, from which they take electronic readouts of information about targeted molecules. The readouts are analogous to incredibly detailed inventories of molecules. The practical outcome is a diagnostic tool that is cheaper, more sensitive, more accurate, and easier to use than established techniques. Customized microscopic magnets that might one day be injected into the body could add color to magnetic resonance imaging, or MRI, while also potentially enhancing sensitivity and the amount of information provided by images, according to researchers at the National Institute of Standards and Technology and National Institutes of Health report. The new micromagnets could also act as smart tags, identifying particular cells, tissues, or physiological conditions for medical research or diagnostic purposes. The NIST and NIH investigators have demonstrated the proof of principle for a new approach to MRI. Unlike the chemical solutions now used as image-enhancing contrast agents in MRI, the NIST NIH micromagnets rely on a precisely tunable feature, their physical shape, to adjust the radio frequency signals used to create the images. The RF signals can then be converted into a rainbow of optical colours by computer. Sets of different magnets designed to appear as different colours could, for example, be coded to attach to different cell types, such as cancerous versus normal. The cells could then be identified by tag colour. Current MRI technology is primarily black and white, while this new technology offers full-coloured images. Princeton engineers have invented an affordable technique that uses lasers and plastic beads to create the ultra-small features that are needed for new generations of microchips. The method, which creates lines and dots that are 1,000 times narrower than a human hair, may enable the creation of biological computers as well as micro-machines with applications in medicine, optical communications, computing and sensor technologies. The technique is similar to positioning a magnifying lens over a scrap of paper and angling the lens to focus sunlight and thereby ignite the paper. In place of the lens, the researchers use a microscopic plastic bead floating in water to focus light from a powerful laser and burn designs into a blank microchip. The key innovation is the use of a second highly focused laser which points directly down onto the bead. This intense light exerts a physical force on the bead, trapping it in the beam and pushing it down towards the surface. The researchers used the technique to draw features that were about 100 nanometers in size. Transparent transistors and optoelectronics, created by researchers at Oregon State University and Hewlett-Packard, have found their first key industrial application in a new type of solar energy system that its developers say will be four times more cost-effective than any existing technology by converting sunlight to electricity at twice the efficiency and half the cost of traditional solar panels. Although this is one of the first applied uses of transparent electronics, it had not even been envisioned when OSU researchers in recent years developed the world's first completely transparent integrated circuit from inorganic compounds. Most advanced solar energy systems use mechanical means to track the sun and optimize the concentration of energy. The system developed by Extreme Energetics, which the use of transparent electronics will facilitate, has an optical approach to tracking and focusing the light. By eliminating mechanical tracking and using a flat design that could be implemented either on rooftop panels or central utilities, company officials say that they can achieve an ultra-high level of solar efficiency that will be far more cost competitive with other energy forms. Scientists working at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center have concocted an innovative recipe for giant telescope mirrors on the moon. To make a mirror that dwarfs anything on Earth, just take a little bit of carbon, throw in some epoxy, and add lots of lunar dust. According to NASA, this approach could be used to make a huge telescope on the moon relatively easily and avoid the large expense of transporting a large mirror from Earth, since most of the materials are already there in the form of dust. For years, the researchers have been working with carbon fiber composite materials to produce high-quality telescope mirrors. But then they decided to try an experiment, substituting carbon nanotubes for the carbon fiber composites. When they mixed small amounts of carbon nanotubes and epoxies with crushed rock that has the same composition and grain size as lunar dust, they discovered to their surprise that they'd created a very strong material with the consistency of concrete. This material can be used instead of glass to make mirrors. They next applied additional layers of epoxy and spun the material at room temperature. The result was a 12-inch wide mirror blank with the parabolic shape of a telescopic mirror. All of this was achieved with minimal effort and cost. Innovative solutions to the problem of storing energy generated by renewable sources are being developed by the researchers at the University of Nottingham. Academics have received 1.4 million euros in funding from E.ON, one of Europe's leading power and gas companies, to develop a new generation of super batteries and undersea storage bags that will collect energy in the form of compressed air. Researchers are using cutting-edge nanotechnology to develop an electrical energy storage system based on power electronics and a new energy storage device called a supercapacitor, which combines the benefits of a supercapacitor and a battery. It will be constructed from carbon nanotubes, chemically engineered with traditional battery materials. On its own, a supercapacitor would be ideal for powering a portable electronic device, such as a laptop, but the researchers are also investigating the potential of using stacks of supercapacitors, which would offer energy storage on a large scale. As researchers develop an ever-expanding toolkit of nanoparticles for use as drug and imaging agent delivery vehicles, there's a growing need to understand how a given nanoparticle's physical and chemical properties affect biological activity and toxicity. Now, two researchers working independently of one another have developed new methods for measuring the biological activity of nanomaterials in a highly systematic manner that enables them to draw important insights about nanomaterial biologic activity. Researchers describe the development of a broad panel of in vitro assays that measure a variety of nanoparticle properties. They then use a technique known as hierarchical clustering that identifies nanomaterials that have similar biological effects across a wide range of assays. This approach enabled the investigators to create strong structure-activity relationships that correlate nanoparticle properties to biological activities. In this week's AzoNano interview, Cameron Chai speaks to Jason Harheim, manager of DPN applications at Nano Inc. Jason tells us about their recently launched DPN forum and provides us with some updates on some DPN technologies that are nearing commercialization.
This is Cameron Chai from AzoNano, and today I've got with me Jason Harheim, who's the manager of the DPN applications group at Nano Inc. How are you doing today, Jason?
Great. Thanks for having me, Cameron.
Now, tell us, what actually is DPN or dip pen nanolithography?
So dip pen is essentially the process of transferring molecular scale material onto a substrate from a sharp tip. The sort of legal definition of it is that it's a patented process for deposition of nanoscale materials onto a substrate. And the vehicle for deposition can include pyramidal scanning probe microscope tips, hollow tips, and even tips on thermally actuated cantilevers. This is something that started back in 1999 at the Merkin Lab at Northwestern University and has grown a great deal since then.
So are you the only people that supply dip pen nanolithography systems?
Yeah, we are. We actually have extremely broad intellectual property coverage in terms of our patent portfolio and an exclusive license we have with Northwestern, which essentially harnesses any ongoing developments in the Merkin Lab there, which then over the last 7 years we've augmented greatly by our own portfolio of patents and developments on our end.
Okay, so dip pen nanolithography technology has been around for about seven or so, or since 1999, you were saying. What stage is it at now?
So since 1999, Nano Inc. was actually incorporated in 2001, and I've been at the company about 5 years, so I've been working on it almost since the beginning. And we were initially developing the instrumentation to be able to work with this technique, this tool for doing molecular scale deposition. And so we started out by getting a lot of these systems out into academic labs. Now, more recently, we've been able to kind of reap the benefits of this by looking at applications that we've developed both internally and that our customers and this community, this base of DPN users, has developed. And we're finding some very compelling applications that we are going to be driving toward commercial development. Also, we have a growing base of users, not just in academic labs, but actually at industrial sites and commercial users that are then developing their own applications with our instrumentation.
Have you got any feel for how long it is before there will actually be commercial applications and people using DPN technology to produce things commercially?
it's on a much closer horizon now. I mean, we are actually looking at several deals. Some of them are sort of still under negotiation, so I can't talk about them specifically. But in the next 1 to 2 years, we anticipate a very strong commercial presence of DPN, where, you know, DPN is not just sort of an experimental approach in an academic lab, but is a means to an end to produce a useful commercial product and something that will, you know, enhance and be new technology in its own right.
Well, that's not far away, a few years away. That's quite close for some of this sort of technology that we speak about and see in the nanotechnology arena.
Yes, absolutely, and we're excited to be a part of it and to be able to have this really powerful position with this extremely versatile technology. I mean, it's something that we're able to develop across a wide range of disciplines, from, you know, the biological to the material, and then to, you know, sensing devices, and just kind of runs the gamut.
So you've got customers that use this technology in academia and industry as well. Sort of, how many people or how widely spread is your technology these days?
So we have, you know, over 75 labs that we know of in the world doing DPN. More are kind of coming online every day. We have a base of customers that numbers over 50. There are 300 actual academic publications out there, and several of our customers, as I mentioned, are actual industrial users. So it's a growing and diverse community of people doing this technology.
And so you were telling me before that you established what's called the DPN community to assist the users of your technology. What is this DPN community?
Yeah, that's right. We launched a website called dpnforum.com. And we did this because we wanted to have a resource available to anyone that essentially, you know, is a meeting place for people to discuss the technology of DPN nanolithography. This is something where, you know, certain parts of our site have support for our specific users and very, you know, detailed help guides and technical support. We have a collection of all the research literature that pertains to DPN, so anyone can go there and find references for any of the papers. We even have an EndNote library that makes it very easy to write your own paper and reference all these. We have fairly detailed ink and substrate methodologies that we have posted for people to use for their own. And then most importantly, I think, is the discussion board, where users can post questions and other people can respond. We launched this just a few weeks ago, and we already have almost 100 users, and we've been getting about 1,500 hits a day on this. So it seems to be a very useful resource for really anyone who wants to learn about the technology, and, you know, kind of a nice showcase for us, because that way we can get, you know, the different elements of this technology out to people who, you know, will find it useful for their own commercial development.
And you also recently had a meeting with all the DPN users that you were telling me about?
That's right, yeah. So if the DPN forum online is sort of this virtual community of people, we had a very literal community of people in person out of this NSTI Nanotech 2008 conference in Boston, where NanoInc sponsored a day-long symposium on direct write nanoscale fabrication. We wanted to involve people from various different industries and disciplines, not just doing DPN, but doing also related and overlapping technique and different ways to pattern surfaces and, you know, affect structures at the nanoscale. It was an incredibly fruitful meeting for us. We had a lot of, you know, not just activity at our exhibit booth, but we had, you know, several hundred people in attendance at our keynote talks for this symposium. And it was a really wonderful way to get all of these DPN researchers interfacing in person and collaborating and, you know, going out and discussing and looking at new ways to push this technology forward.
So if you were to summarize in a sentence or two what the goals of the DPN community are, how would you do that?
Well, we want to get as much critical mass going in terms of people kind of sharing their collective wisdom regarding the science. Because, you know, as I mentioned, the science is still young. It was just kind of hatched in the Merkin lab in 1999. And so we have a lot to learn about it, but we also have a lot that we are collecting and able to advance toward these commercial applications. Several of the papers that were presented at this conference were very much to this end, where we were looking at applications that are not any longer just kind of exercises, but are applied efforts toward commercial development. One of them has to do with conductive inks. So the idea is that DPN can write conductive traces directly onto nanoscale circuitry or sensing elements, and be able to pass current through it and do so on a much smaller scale than any other method available, and can actually do so in a way that is directed in its placement, where some other techniques have difficulty doing that. Another one involved the overlap of surface-enhanced Raman scattering and DPN. This was an exciting paper in that there's a general need to be able to detect biological materials at the single molecule level. The way these techniques overlap means that we can examine spectroscopic information and look at exactly what's on the surface with extremely high levels of sensitivity that will bring value, we hope, and you know, we plan to push this in diagnostic and research applications.
So through the DPN community website, have you come up with or found new applications for DPN that maybe you guys hadn't even thought of before, that some of your users perhaps have come up with?
Well, we've gotten some interesting inquiries about biological patterning. You know, we're able to respond to these with what we know, and then, you know, there have been instances when people will kind of chime in and give an angle to a certain problem that we haven't considered yet. You know, as it's only a few weeks old, we haven't been able to realize an actual commercial application out of it yet, but that's certainly what we're hoping for.
All right, so that sounds really interesting. So anybody who's out there who thinks that DPN might be an answer for them, or maybe they're using DPN and they're looking for a new way to use DPN technology, maybe they should go and have a look at your forum there.
Yeah, again, it is open to anyone. Anyone in the world can register for the site and participate and post. The URL is just dpnforum.com, and there's a link then to the discussion forums where you can get going.
All right then, Jason, thanks very much for your time. That's all very interesting. Good to hear that your technology should hopefully soon be used in commercial applications. That's always exciting news. And for anybody who's got any further questions for Jason, they can contact him through the NanoInc site, which is www.nanoinc.net.
Thanks a lot, Cameron.
Thanks for your time today, Jason.
Azo Nano Business News. XSunX Incorporated, a solar technology company, announced today that it secured supply of germanium gas required for its thin film deposition process for the manufacture of solar panels. The germanium, manufactured by Voltaics LLC, is a key material for production of high-efficiency tandem solar cells. XSunX is refurbishing an existing 90,000-square-foot building located in Wood Village near Portland, Oregon, to house its new multi-megawatt integrated TFPV manufacturing operations. To spur new development and demand for renewable energy sources, Intel Corporation is spinning off key assets of a startup business effort inside Intel's New Business Initiatives Group to form an independent company called SpectraWatt Incorporated. Intel Capital, Intel's global investment organization, is leading a $50 million investment round in SpectraWatt and is joined by Cogentrix Energy LLC, a wholly owned subsidiary of the Goldman Sachs Group, PCG Clean Energy and Technology Fund, and Solon AG. The transaction is expected to close in the second quarter of 2008. SpectraWatt will manufacture and supply photovoltaic cells to solar module makers. Tokyo Oka Kogyo Company and IBM are collaborating to establish new, low-cost methods for bringing the next generation of solar energy products to market, products that will be more affordable and easier to install than those available today. Specifically, TOK and IBM have agreed to jointly develop processes, materials, and equipment suitable for the production of CIGS, copper, indium, gallium, selenide, solar cell modules. Currently, the relatively high cost of electricity produced by solar cells compared to electricity from other energy sources is an inhibitor to a more widespread adoption of solar energy. Use of thin film technology, such as CIGS, has great promise in reducing the overall cost of solar cells and further enabling their widespread adoption. Industrial Nanotech Incorporated, an emerging global leader in nanotechnology, announced today that a fourth NASCAR race team has purchased the company's patented nanotechnology-based coating, NanoBoost, for use on race cars to control heat transfer and improve performance. Nano Proprietary Incorporated announced that its subsidiary, Applied Nanotech Incorporated, has achieved substantial improvements in the epoxy-based materials used in a variety of industries. ANI has been performing research and development on these materials for over 2 years in conjunction with a project for a sporting goods manufacturer. In results independently verified by Texas State University at San Marcos, ANI has achieved an improvement of over 40% in flexural strength and over 30% in compression strength for epoxy carbon nanotube composites. These improvements were obtained through the chemical and mechanical modification and functionalization of carbon nanotubes in order for them to be accepted and integrated properly into the epoxy matrix. Well, that was AzoNano News for the week commencing the 23rd of June 2008. If you have any nano courses, events or exhibitions you'd like to promote to a global nanotech audience, don't forget you can list them for free at azonano.com. To read expanded versions of the stories you've heard about in this podcast or to stay in touch with the world of nanotechnology, please visit www.azonano.com. If you'd like to send us feedback or let us know about nanotechnology news in your part of the world, please email us at podcast@azonano.com. I'm Stuart Cameron. Thanks for listening.